This time of year, the school calendar really starts to fill up. Spring activities, testing season, and that final push toward the end of the year. It's a great moment for kids to stay focused and build confidence in what they're learning. That's where IXL comes in. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand their schoolwork, from math and reading to writing and science. It's designed for pre-K through 12th grade, with personalized interactive content that adapts to each child's level and pace. IXL makes it easy to stay on track with instant feedback and clear explanations, skills organized by grade level, and simple progress tracking. It fits into even the busiest spring schedules. It's also trusted nationwide. In fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey, before we get started on our episode, we wanted to share something fun that we've been thinking about and getting excited about. Ashley, would you want to tell them about it?
Yes. So Feeding the Mouth is having our first contest. We want to hear about your inspiring teen. You can find out all the details over on our Instagram at Feeding the Mouth.
You are listening to Feeding the Mouth That Bites You with Ashley Parrish and Jessica Pfeiffer,
a weekly podcast guide on parenting teens and launching them into the world. As always, we are joined by psychologist and author, Dr. Ken Wilgus.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. We wanted to let you Patreon supporters know that we really appreciate you. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, head on over to Patreon, Feeding the Mouth, and join us there. We really appreciate you guys. There's some really great stuff over there. Dr. Ken even put a Feeding the Mouth guide.
Study guide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to the book, like, right?
To teach it, yes.
It's super neat. And so you can print it out and do a study guide with the book. If you haven't already read the book, read the book.
Mm-hmm. Good. Right? It's yes, good. So good.
It's good. And so, if you haven't, if you feel cool with it, give us a rating. Have you seen the rating, the feedback on the podcast, you know, like just people giving it a review?
It's love really them. Fun. Yes. So and if you don't like it, don't leave a review. I'm just kidding.
Exactly. No, maybe you should, but what are you listening to it for if you don't like
it? We want 5 stars and all the best reviews.
Yeah, for sure. It is really fun. I think that's the best part about doing what we're doing is hearing back from people saying, this is really changing our family. It's really helping our relationship with our teen. And I just find that so rewarding. I love it. I love hearing the reviews. I love getting emails from our listeners and discovering emails in my junk mail, which we've talked about a little bit before, but I am so sorry. If I haven't replied to your email and you sent something, it's usually because I didn't discover it in my junk.
We got to fix
it. Sorting
that.
It that way. Yes.
I know.
So anyway, well, we get a lot of questions. And one of the probably the most common questions is, this is what's going on in my family. Should I still be following this planned emancipation plan? People want to know if there's an exception to planned emancipation, if there's an exception to, you know, the plan that you laid out in your book, Feeding the Mouth That Bites You, that says, you know, your kid isn't ready for this, so you don't have to give them this freedom.
Right.
It doesn't count for your kid.
You mean slow down the clock a bit, like, well, sure, but we can't do it if they have this problem or that problem.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, I get that a lot.
Yeah. So we'd like to throw a few questions your way, Dr. Ken, and ask you about specific situations that we've heard from with our listeners.
That'll be
good. And ask you if this is an exception to planned emancipation.
Good.
Yes. So I know that for myself, let's just clarify, you know, there are a lot of times that I think my kids are irresponsible and they don't deserve the next freedom.
Right.
You may be 16, but you're not responsible enough to drive a car because you can't even find your shoes in the morning.
That's come up exactly that. That's correct.
So is that sort of normal, irresponsible, or maybe even disobedient difficulties with your kids where they are really pushing your buttons, trying to be hard to live with, a reason not to give them the next freedom.
Give them that next freedom. Well, that's those are great examples that help to clarify a fundamental distinction about planned emancipation from, let's say, parenting with love and logic. And that is, we are not talking about giving adolescents greater privilege. when they have earned it. That's what is really good parenting for children. And I strongly recommend it. It is good, but it's kind of a default for all of us that we keep doing that. You know, if you get this angry with me, I am not going to let you get a driver's license where you could kill someone out, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it all comes back to, you have to remember that now that you have young adults, there is a clock on the wall, that one of those countdown clocks, and your role in their life is going to come to an end, whether you want it to, whether you like it to. And it is for virtually all of our listeners, international as well as American. I think it would be after they have finished secondary, what we call high school, that after that, the state, you know, look at it this way, your government isn't going to agree with you that, officer, you know, she's 18, but we told her that she can't leave our house. They're going to tell you that, no, she can do that. You don't have that power. So everything after that has to be cooperative with, don't get me wrong, there actually are a couple of exceptions, but this is not one of them. Mm-hmm. If my kid is this or that problem, and driving is a good example, I always want to remind you that getting a driver's license is a little bit like a rite of passage, but you don't have to let them drive your car. So having a driver's license certainly doesn't mean that, you know, I have kids that are always like, man, when I get my license, I'm going to be gone all the time. And I'm like, great, what kind of car are you going to buy? What? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, you can't do so. So you still have control over that, mm-hmm. like the control you have over everything. You own everything they have, including any use of a car. But there's no need to slow down that step of, for example, driving. We did that. One of our kids was pretty timid, pretty shy, kind of anxious, really wasn't eager to drive. I hear that a lot. And we pressed it. No, you're going to get your license because, mm-hmm. you know, you're 16. So that's not an exception, you know, like because of this or that, I'm worried about their driving. Those don't overlap like that. You can't, you know, I can't find my shoes a lot of time, but I'm okay driver.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I was thinking. Sometimes we hold our teenagers to a higher standard than ourselves. And we're always quick to look for reasons to justify not letting them have a freedom.
Exactly.
Because I mean, if you would have looked at me this past week, you know, like there are things that I forgot or things that I, you know, let slide on accident that, you know, I didn't mean to. Right. And if somebody was holding me to that standard and be like, well, Ashley, you can't drive today, you know, that would have made me angry.
It's a perfect example. It's also true that that's why that doesn't work. You know, mm-hmm. that logic of saying, listen, we told you, if you can't bring your grades up, then you're not ready to be driving a car. There's no teenager that goes, well, that's a really good point. It just seems as absurd as what you just said to them. Like, mm-hmm. what has that got to do with anything?
Right, right. And we did do a driving episode. Episode number 49 is driving in teenagers. So,
which apparently I've forgotten over and over again.
We did cover a little bit more of this, but we did really dive into teenagers and driving and getting their license and all of that. So if you're interested in that, go back to episode 49.
Good, good.
Okay. What other ones? What about when your child has ADD or ADHD and other significant, maybe learning differences, you know, they're forgetful or maybe they, you know, aren't making good grades, that sort of thing. Do you say, hey, you're not allowed to go off to college, you're not allowed to get your license, that sort of thing, because you can't even keep normal things together. It seems like you're distracted.
You know, what normally happens with that is that, you know, learning difference doesn't actually rise to the point of parents announcing, you know, because you have ADHD, you're not ready to leave this house. What it does do is it kind of is implied, like parents spend so much time supporting their teenager because of the learning difference and helping out. And the teenager, as you know, usually doesn't like it. But if it's a significant learning issue, they'll put up with it because they know they really, you know, can't deal without it. So it kind of by default ends up with the message of you're not ready because, you know, I even helped you, you know, finish your studying for your final exams for your senior year. So so it often is an almost unofficial exception. Mm-hmm. That the appropriate alternative is to even if they're cooperative with you being their little secretary or you doing all this stuff, you need to let go of that virtually always by senior year, because there's a big difference between a graduated senior that is, quote, not ready to get out there versus a graduated senior that is an adult but has insight into his struggles and knows what he needs and can ask for it when he is in another setting, like a college or whatever. And so parents that just sort of coddle your kid through school and take care of that learning issue are missing a super important goal of, yeah, but you need to also back off enough so that your teenager can gain insight into what is this struggle that I have and what, you know, kind of interventions help with that. ADD medicine is a common one. You know, I'm fine with you pressing your 7-year-old to take their medicine if they're super hyperactive. But if your 14-year-old is like, I don't want to do that anymore, then I think the almost always is, okay, well, we're willing to pay for it if you want to go back on it, but if not, fine. And then the struggles that they have may help them to see, yeah, I think turns out that medicine was helpful. But it, you know, it's a normal thing. You have to gain the insight into what the learning issue is so that the young adult is prepared to get the help they need rather than you pushing it on them.
That's good.
So it's not a reason to get off of the planned emancipation plan.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. And it's also not a reason to, you know, early on, very often you have to kind of let them, we're going to back off of managing it. But you're responsible for your grades. Very often it's like, well, we can't do that because, you know, she's dyslexic and really can't handle it. Yet, well, you notice that she hates your guts for constantly help, you know, that is her adulthood coming through. So, you know, it's better to let that go at the same time, even though, yeah, a parent that's really been involved will know that, wow, this is not going to work out well. I should point out, by the way, however, that the good news is, many parents are notoriously wrong about how bad their kid's going to do. I can't tell you how many times parents have said, well, fine, but you know, we'll talk to you at the end of the semester when he's failed everything. And I got to a point where I was like, $50. If he fails everything, I'll pay you $50. But if he doesn't, and you know, of course I'm not serious, but because very often this disaster you think is going to happen doesn't. If they are given that freedom because of the respect for your age, it gives young adults the chance to rise to the occasion.
Mm-hmm. That's what we want. That's what we want for our teenagers, exactly, ultimately. Right. But sometimes as parents, we just get so scared and fearful. But exactly. If they have a learning difference, I mean, that's just the way that their brain is wired. And that's the way that their brain works. And that's how their brain is going to work when they don't live with you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
when they're in college or they've grown and, you know, they are pursuing a job or a career, that's still the way that their brain is going to work. So just remembering that sometimes I think it's a good reminder for us parents, you know, like this is the way they are and we're not going to be with them forever.
Yeah, exactly. And we're helping them gain insight into their own weaknesses.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's awesome. And we did do an episode on ADHD and other learning issues in teenagers on episode 44.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Good, Ashley.
I feel like we've done all this then. What are we doing? Why are we?
Some of it we're
trying to find out. Dr. Ken, that's is good. There an exception?
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. We haven't gotten there yet. Nope. That's not
the yet. Exceptions. Okay. That's not it yet. Okay. What if your kid struggles with anxiety and depression or has significant mood struggles? I know some kids, you know, particularly if they have anxiety, a lot of times they won't push the envelope to leave the house or to get their license or any of the next step. But then also with depression, your kid may not want to leave the house. They may not want to get a license. They may not be motivated.
That's like the flip side. If there's anything worse than a rebellious, angry teenager that wants to be treated all completely like an adult before they're really ready, what's worse is a teenager that really is fine with just staying in a room or you know, being helped by his parents and doesn't even know that, you know, that's offensive, dude. You're 17. Aren't you bothered by that? No, I've got my video games and I'm fine in my room and I don't have, that's worse. So, and mood disorders like anxiety and depression can often create that kind of scenario. And parents sometimes are secretly happy, like, well, you know, at least they're here with us. The problem
is without getting in trouble.
Well, exactly. It could be worse. The problem is that, you know, when they're finished with high school, they are an adult, like depressed adult, anxious adult. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, yeah, but another year maybe, you know, will help. No, there is no development that's going to happen where it gets better. It will, in fact, get worse if you're sheltering them from that struggle. Anxiety is a big one that, you know, significant severe anxiety definitely requires some treatment, but there's a kind of a level of medium social anxiety type. You respond to it by throwing yourself out there. You've got to get out there some. Mm-hmm. And you don't allow yourself to shelter yourself away from everything. It's actually good for you to be forced out there and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So no, not an exception. You certainly are offering whatever support and treatment, but you definitely, and this happens a lot, you need to not forget that you're constantly also reminding them that I know this is hard, but this is your junior year. And, you know, you really got to figure out how you're going to handle this. Very often, you know, we don't even want to bring that up because that just adds to their pressure. Well, no, that's the real thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, we have soldiers in basic training, but we don't like talking about the possibility of them going into battle. Well, that's what they're preparing for. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you need to, again, it's similar to the learning issue, is that the goal is not just to bolster them and keep them protected. It is to also help them gain insight into the difficulty that they're having. So mm-hmm. nope, not an exception.
Okay.
And I want to remind listeners that episode 27 is teen depression. Episode 31 is anxiety, fear, and depression.
Boom.
Good.
So nope. What are we, four down, three down? You haven't found them.
Okay. Go, Ashley. I want you to take some of these.
Okay. Dr. Ken, what about drugs and alcohol?
Yes. Drugs and alcohol, especially in late in adolescence, is a real hassle. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you have to respond to that. Like there's, you know, that say it's April of their senior year and you find, you know, a bunch of beer bottles in his closet, you have to respond with, you know, significant, you know, 2 to 4 weeks of grounding. If this mm-hmm. has happened before, you might even be needing to take them to a drug counselor, but you must keep in mind, wait a minute, what time is it? Oh, it's 2 months. And so it does affect what you can do to intervene. Mm-hmm. But as for, is there some way to hold back? I think drugs and alcohol, it kind of seem like, you know, if my kid's drinking and they're turning 16, well, I can't get a driver's license because I think they'll drink and drive. That's still an example of, no, that's why you're not going to let them drive your car. Mm-hmm. But you still, you know, the whole point, like we're saying, is that you must keep that forward momentum going for in not only the freedoms, but how you talk to them. And so you could certainly tell a guy, wow, you know, I think you're going to go get your learner's permit here in a month. And that's going to be funny because 6 months after that, when you get your license, you're not driving any of my vehicles. I'll tell you that. It'd be cool once you have your license if you could maybe drive. But at this rate, this is your second strike on drinking. So I don't know what we're going to, you know, something that's actually motivating that, you know, the demotivating is, well, because of this, we're slowing things down. That does not signal to teenagers that, wow, I need to get myself going like a child, like I need to be more responsible so I'll get more freedom. It's more like a teenager that's discouraging that I'm not just being punished. I'm going backward. I'm now, you know, I was 16 yesterday, but I'm 12 today. It's very discouraging. The right. Encouraging is, no, you're still on track. You're going to grow up here, but you're going to have a pretty boring year if you keep doing this, the drinking. You're not going anywhere in my car. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things. That's more impactful. It gives them light at the end of the tunnel and something really to go toward, that the freedom is there for you if you just aren't doing, you know, and drugs and alcohol, like I say, that's a significant issue that always has to be addressed.
Right.
You never compromise on that, but the consequences and so forth, do not ever rise to the point of, so we're just going to keep you home for another year. You cannot do that.
And I do want to clarify for all of our listeners, we absolutely 100% do not condone drinking and alcohol.
Which is teenagers. Weird that we have to say that, though, don't you think? Mm-hmm. But there is a number of, at least parents' perception, that mm-hmm. no, I think there's other parents that are cool with it. And they are partially right. Mm-hmm. Also, remember that your teenager is not going to tell you about the other kid that whose parents are just like you. They're only going to tell you the parents that don't. But you're mm-hmm. right. It's weird. We have to clarify that we mm-hmm. don't. We go with all the global research yeah. and do not condone drug and alcohol use in adolescence. It's of course not.
Right. It's illegal. The fact that it's illegal.
That's exactly right. Exactly.
It's just, these are teenagers. It's illegal in every single state. So,
but they're legalizing marijuana in a lot of states. Not for you. No yeah. one's thinking about it for you until 21.
Right. It's right. not okay. Even if other parents, you know, even if other parents in your community allow their teenagers to socially drink, we yeah. say no. That's
I think there are more parents that are in fact falling for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, just don't drive. Now or that's our drunk. Rule. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't get drunk. Good luck with that. Teenagers mm-hmm. do not drink. They get drunk. That is exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember being shocked by that with my oldest when I realized, you know, somewhere along the way, we're not all on the same team here, parents. You know, I was looking around at yeah. them like, we're going to be here for each other and we're going to do this together. And then realized, oh, we have different opinions. And I think a lot of parents feel like, well, they're going to do it anyway. They might as well do it at my house where I know they're safe. Until okay, what's you're the one driving there? The kid to the ER who's over.
Right.
Right.
We already, I know we said that one on the drugs and alcohol one, didn't we?
Yes.
We did.
Yep. Yep. That's we exactly did. Right.
Yes. Okay. What about eating disorders? What if your child is struggling with eating disorders and you feel like if they leave the house or go off to college, that you're going to regret that decision, allowing them to leave, you know, being alone or being out there without you?
You know, eating disorder is in some way a very easy one to answer mm-hmm. because almost always what underlies an eating disorder is control. And a battle over control. It doesn't mean that it's a logical battle, but there is a kind of a felt sense of very often of the satisfaction of having control over my body. Mm-hmm. And one of the easiest pitfalls that parents get into is trying to take over and we are going to make you eat a certain amount and whatever, and virtually always results in worsening of the condition and more mm-hmm. secretive purging and all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. that one, ironically, is easy that no matter what age, teenage eating disorders get better with or your first step is to wave the white flag. Honey, you know, we want to help, but we want to be real clear with you. We can't make sure that you eat and that you stay, you know, we can't control that. You have to almost keep reminding them of that. So not only is that not an exception, I think it's one that you have to constantly say out loud, we're worried, we're encouraging this and that, we still need you to go to the therapist and the nutritionist, but the reason we're worried is because we cannot make this happen. If you keep doing this, it's up to you, which sounds reverse, like, no, I want them to know that we care. No, it's very often, that's what fans the flame of an eating disorder, is if I can get one or both of my parents to get in there and ask, well, what did you do for breakfast? Did you eat breakfast? Okay. Now, no, that's not enough. You have to put the big, you know, big swing and a miss. So mm-hmm. no,
okay.
That's definitely not.
He said so no,
yeah, no,
that's a no. We haven't hit it yet.
Okay. What about if we have a teenager whose age doesn't necessarily match their grade? So either they're a really young senior, or they're a really old senior. Does that change anything?
Yeah, that one is a good question. I had a parent ask that. So let's say that, you know, they were held back. Mm-hmm. And so all of their friends are not driving, but your kid is old enough to drive. That actually is one of the few that I'm not super clear on. I tend to think that it's a problem. You want to go mostly with the peers, their same age peers, which is in their school. Mm-hmm. But that's the driving examples are hard to do because if they're 16, you don't want to signal that, yeah, but you're still a freshman as far as we're concerned or whatever that, you know, that thing is. So I think that there's a little bit of leeway there, how parents want to handle it. I lean toward go with the grade, but with some kind of finessed exceptions. So yes, you can get your license, but there'll be pretty significant limitations for the remainder of this year until next year when more of your friends are doing it. Because, you know, one of the problems with that is that your kid suddenly becomes extra popular.
Right.
Oh, great. You must be super cool. Oh, wait a minute. Are you the driver? Oh, okay. That is not the best way to be friends with everybody. They're just using right. you. So that one is not, it's still not an exception, but I will grant that that's a bit of a complication in that most of the time, I think you try to stick with the freedoms that match their same age peers. Like say they're, you know, your older brother, he got this at this point. Yeah. But you know, he was, you're younger than he was in this grade, something like that. You know, I think it tends to fit with the grade.
So what if you have a senior that's 17? And they're graduating and they're still 17. They're not quite 18 yet. Does that change anything?
Mostly no, believe it or not, because let's say, you know, and that's not that common, but, you know, I've had 17-year-olds that are going off to college. I think you're still better at, if you've established a relationship where you can, without control battle, talk about, hey, so let's talk about your school sent us a special form because you're not 18 and you're going off. So how are we going to handle that? It's actually should be on the list of a kind of a problem that your adult kid is handling because they're still 17, you know, something mm-hmm. like that. Because as I mentioned before, the age of 18 is in fact not as big a line to cross as your teenager hopes it is. I always tell teenagers, you know, like I'm going to be 18 in January. So, and I'm like, great. So go buy a gun. You can do that. And you can vote. So you can shoot a hole in a voting ballot. But other than that, it doesn't change anything. You can't buy alcohol. You can't get tobacco. And you still, if you want to live in your parents' house, you still pretty much have to follow their rules or they can, right. Oh, that's a new one. They can absolutely kick you out. So mm-hmm. congratulations, you know, so it's not a big deal.
It's not, you know what though, if you have a kid that has been a difficult child to raise, by the time they get to 18, you're like, good, you're tried as an adult and I don't have to be at your trial.
I think if you find yourself saying that, that's a bit of a red flag.
Oh, okay. So what about, you know, if you have a child who has intellectual disabilities or has autism, is on the spectrum, where you're concerned about their ability to make wise decisions because they're, you know, they're different than other kids, they're different than their same age peers in their decision-making capabilities. What do you say about that?
There you go. That's the ding, first, ding, ding. The Daily Double. The first of the two exceptions is intellectual disability, significant autism spectrum, where almost literally, if you think about it, after they have finished high school years, it's not always in intervening, but even the community around you will support you in the need for continued support, help, that kind of thing. If they were to, you know, really not want to be told what to do, there are definitely significantly impaired intellectual kids that this is an exception. It doesn't count for them. There's obvious. And again, it's measured by, you know, does the community agree with me? Like it's one thing to say, you know, I'm not going to let you drive a car if you can't find your key, you know, your shoes. It's another thing to say, you really can't qualify to get a license, you know, and that's an obvious exception. You don't need to be It you start at the end, like mm-hmm. what is the end point? Are they going to still be living with us after that, those years? Then that is an exception to planned emancipation. Those, mm-hmm. What parents are sometimes surprised by is you'll still feel the pushback You know, sometimes with severely impaired intellectual, they tend to think, well, you know, he's going to kind of remain a child. No, it actually gets complicated. There's sexual interest. There's, you know, really hating being controlled and that kind of thing that is almost age appropriate. But that's where it gets complicated. Virtually all parents need extra support from the community, therapy, because that is, in fact, an exception to the rule. You do not need to follow those same steps if there's significant intellectual impairment and significant spectrum. I think we talked about in the past about autism spectrum. You need to be also aware that there's a way to be diagnosed on the spectrum. The fact that we call it a spectrum means that you can have a very small amount that is not a huge impairment, and you should still stay on the track. But mm-hmm. a significant amount, that's all should be almost self-explanatory. Right. This kid cannot go out on his own. And so we are not doing planned emancipation in that kind of pace at all.
Mm-hmm. And the point of that is that every parent who has a child with those kind of needs clearly knows that this is not going to happen for their child, or that it might be delayed some years. But most parents think that their kids need to be limited more than they actually do. And that's right. The point we're trying to make is that there are a lot of options for kids who, even kids who are on the spectrum and things like that, that we're not allowing them to do more, is really our fear as parents.
Yes. Yes, that's right. So that's exactly right. So there's one. Good for you.
There's one. Okay. I guessed one. How about you?
What about trauma? Like an incident happened, Dr. Ken, where maybe we lost a loved one, a grandma, a grandpa that was really close, or a mom or dad. Let's say their senior year. Does that change anything?
I think that, you know, that's come up sort of not directly. I've never had parents say, Dr. Lewis, we decided we're not going to let her go on to college because, you know, she lost her dad just 3 months ago. What happens more is just indirectly, like the whole family may be grieving, mm-hmm. and we just kind of aren't going to think about that, you know, the senior year stuff or whatever. That in those cases, as hard as it is important for parents to remember that significant events that have happened certainly need to, as best you can, not slow down that clock. Sometimes parents are really surprised that after, you know, the whole thing that happened to our family, she's still talking about who she's going to go to prom with, or, you know, what. Yeah, because teenagers are still, above all, needing to get through and grow up and be, you know, so usually you just need to be reminded that you can certainly allow for a grieving period and certainly give your teenager the freedom to, you know, you don't have to go get your driver's license, you know, in the next 3 months. But believe it or not, even though, you know, you have a grieving kid, it is helpful to them to remind them, hey, you know, we still need to talk about when you're going to be ready to do this next thing, because, you know, you're a young adult and you're still moving. That's encouraging for teenagers, while it's very different for adults. And so, yeah, not an exception, except mm-hmm. that it just adds to the loving and carefulness you need to be. But if anything, you need to be careful that it doesn't sort of by default kind of shut everything down. That's not good for the teenager. It's mm-hmm. maybe good for you because you want to keep everyone close.
Well, Dr. Ken, I just think about my story. You know, my senior year in high school, my dad passed away in March, and then I graduated in May. And when he passed away, it kind of changed all of my decisions as far as college goes, because I was planning on going away to college and my dad was going to support me in that. And so with him passing, suddenly I had to stay at home and I went to a junior college, which was fine. But me staying at home, I still was allowed the freedoms I would have had I gone off to school. Yeah, and yeah. I was grateful for that. So I'm really mm-hmm. thinking about those parents that, you know, a spouse passes away, your senior graduates, they end up staying home, their college course changes, but you're still giving them that freedom, you know, certain freedoms, that's right. because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't in the plan, but you're right. still continuing that planned emancipation, even though things look a little bit different.
Yeah, that's a really good example. I forgot about that. That was March of your senior year. Mm-hmm. Goodness gracious. That really does. It's a perfect example. Think about the other where, you know, yeah, her father passed away. And yes, we do have the savings for her to go to college, but we have told her that we don't think this would be a year for you to go off to college. You're actually adding to the trauma by doing that. You know, yeah. It's like, by yeah. the way, your father passed away and you've reduced yourself to 14. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not helpful at all. It's you might, you know, offer advice. Advice giving is part of the communication chapter in the book, but definitely, reinforce. We're not telling you what to do. You're too old for that. So that's a perfect example. Nope, not an exception.
Okay. So what about a significant mental illness? Maybe your child has been struggling with significant mental illnesses on several medications just to get by during the days and that sort of thing. Would that be a situation where you would say, yeah, I don't know if it's right for our kid to have the autonomy of being an adult right now?
And that's the second one. Good for you. Jessica has found the other exception. if it's not significant intellectual disability or spectrum level of significant disability, the other one is essentially psychotic mental illness, where they really are not in touch with reality. I do not mean, yeah, well, he thinks he can just laze his way through school and get good grades. He's out of touch with reality. No, that's not what I mean.
I mean,
where there's actual medication, hospitalization, psychiatric help for essentially a formal thought disorder. They're really not with it. Now, by the way, this is incredibly rare. Mm-hmm. So so it's almost not worth talking about, but it has come up a couple of times that would also be a situation where at the end of the high school years, it's very possible that, you know, you would even get a cooperation from the community that, yeah, we agree with you. Your kid is not ready to do that. So, but that not a mood disorder, but an actual thought disorder, mm-hmm. psychotic, like my favorite aunt, Aunt Sissy, who had schizoaffective disorder. And she heard stuff that wasn't there. And when she was off her medicine, which was the most fun when I was a kid, she would signal me to come back to the bedroom and show me. Do you know that you ever see the Globe? You know, the National Enquirer was this kind of wild, you know, unprofessional kind of journalism.
Yes.
Far worse than that was the aliens. Globe. The Globe reported that aliens had landed.
Yes.
They always had the Bat Boy. I don't even know who that was, but it was some kid with fur on his face. And my aunt would just go nuts on that kind of stuff and talk about it. She struggled quite a bit. And mm-hmm. I only talk about her because I'm not kidding. She was clearly my favorite aunt and I was her favorite nephew. So, mm-hmm. but you know, she was not ready to, you know, to kind of be on her own. It was just too difficult.
Mm-hmm. Right. And like I said before, with discussing intellectually disabled kids, this is the same situation where a parent who has a child like this is clearly going to know that they're not ready to face the world. They might be in treatment centers. They might be struggling with medications and trying to get things figured out. There's maybe a delay there until they get some things worked out. Right. But
right.
for the most part, parents who do not have a child that's in that situation should give their kids those freedoms that they've clearly laid out already.
That's really the point of why I wanted to do this episode, is that believe it or not, those are actually the only two clear exceptions. And none of these others are, because autonomy and being ready to manage the freedom that you have when you are finished with high school is that imperative. You cannot find ways that, well, yeah, that's important too, but those are the only two exceptions. And it surprises parents, I think, sometimes, who are often just assuming that, well, okay, yeah, that would be all great, but my kid has. And again, if it's not those two, then it does not change. You would still be raising a kid that is going to grow up here, but grow up with the awareness, hopefully, the insight of this weakness, that struggle, and hopefully some of the tools they would have for themselves. Here's what I know I will do about this thing, rather than my parents do it for me. That's your goal. And it's so important that nothing else is an exception.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense? That's the whole point. That's my whole point.
Yes.
Yeah. autonomy, not perfection, right?
Right.
Well, this has been a great conversation. I know we get a lot of questions each week about my kid is struggling with this. Does this mean I delay this next freedom? So I hope this answers questions from parents. I think as a parent myself, it reassures me that my kids need this freedom and they're going to mess it up. They're going to struggle. They're going to have a lot of issues and they're going to do stupid things, but the end goal is still the same. They need to be an autonomous adult and the time is ticking and I need to pay attention to that clock on the wall, as Dr. Ken says. Thank you guys.
Thanks for joining us today. Hit the subscribe button so you won't miss an episode. Also, leave us a review. This is how other listeners find our podcast. Follow us on Instagram at Feeding the Mouth.
We appreciate you and would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, thoughts, or ideas about what we've discussed today, please email us at podcast@feedingthemouth.com.
This time of year, the school calendar really starts to fill up. Spring activities, testing season, and that final push toward the end of the year. It's a great moment for kids to stay focused and build confidence in what they're learning. That's where IXL comes in. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand their schoolwork, from math and reading to writing and science. It's designed for pre-K through 12th grade, with personalized interactive content that adapts to each child's level and pace. IXL makes it easy to stay on track with instant feedback and clear explanations, skills organized by grade level, and simple progress tracking. It fits into even the busiest spring schedules. It's also trusted nationwide. In fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.